and welcome. This is Bobby Laporte, CEO of Bobby Laporte & Associates and host of the Executive Aid Station. In today's competitive and dynamic executive marketplace, we believe that leadership is an endurance event, and we are here to provide the support that today's leaders need. Our show guests are executives who have successfully achieved a balanced life, as well as experts in fitness, health and wellness, and personal leadership. And they share their strategies for living and leading mindfully and gaining a competitive edge in the workplace. My very special guest today is Ken Lubin, who I am envious of because he lives not far from my hometown of Boston, and it's a wonderful time of year to be in New England. Ken is managing director with ZRG Partners, a global executive search firm. His focus is on the financial services industry, and for the past 15 years, he has had tremendous success in placing individuals in diverse sectors, including fintech, asset-based lending, trade finance, credit cards, banking, and payments. In addition to his professional life, Ken is a competitive athlete who loves the thrill of pushing himself to excel. He competes in ski racing, bike racing, running races, and endurance events, and it is his way of getting into a truly introspective state, which he believes then allows him to perform better as a professional, as a parent, a spouse, and as an athlete. His personal philosophy is that sacrifice, hard work, desire, and passion for constant improvement drives him to constantly look for ways to excel in both his professional and personal life. And he also believes that athletics, like I do, and the quest for optimal health and high performance are highly synergistic, that if you pursue both, you can become your best in life as well as in business. And that's what makes him, I think, a perfect guest to join us today on the Executive Aid Station. So, Ken, welcome.
Great, Bobby. Great to be part of it, and I'm excited to chat further.
Yeah, so am I. Thank you. So I have lots of thoughts to cover with you based on all the different facets we talked about in the introduction. But let's start at the beginning. So when did your passion for competitive sports begin, and what inspired you?
You know, I think... as a kid, I was always somewhat of an athlete, but not really. I never really took it very seriously. You know, played town soccer. I wasn't a high school athlete. I didn't really do anything. It probably wasn't until the middle of high school when I really started to embrace ski racing. And ski racing in New England back then, back in the 80s, early 90s, wasn't the thing that high school did, or actually where I lived. So I raced for a local mountain, and it's really where it started. You know, I always watched Wide World of Sports, loved ski racing, would watch it anytime I could get on a fuzzy TV somewhere, and it just sort of grew from there. And, you know, growing up and wanting to become better and better is really what drove me towards that. So ski racing was my first love. Raced all through high school and college as well, and during that same time, I became passionate, really about training and trying to improve. I wanted to get better on the snow, but you know, I did it through other ways. And in the same time I was doing that, I fell in love with bike racing and excelled in that as well. So it was the perfect scenario of ski racing in the winter and bike racing in the summer. It was a great life for a while.
Ski racing in the winter, bike racing in the summer. Good cross training.
It was perfect. It was perfect. It was a way of life. It was spending weekends on the road. It was spending time in cool places with great people. So
right.
It was one of those things I couldn't stop. It was, you know, it was an addiction.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because I know for myself, and I started later in life in endurance sports, and for some of my teammates or training partners, that it really does become a way of life. I want to talk later on about how you balance all these things, right? I mean, then there's definitely synergy between your athletics and your professional life and personal life. But it really becomes, sort of, the way I look at it, is it becomes really a way of life. And as I did my first Ironman, and when I crossed the finish line, somebody said to me, are you going to do another one? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no way I'm not going to do another one. And my coach said to me, give in to the addiction. Because that's kind of what it becomes when it really bites you and you realize all the potential benefits that this has across all the domains of your life. It just really does become a way of life.
It does, and it pushes you to try new things you would never consider
right.
in the past, and it creates a healthy lifestyle
yes.
for the most part.
Can be dangerous sometimes, though, as well.
It does, yes.
So just moving on, so you received your degree in sports science at Colby Sawyer, and then you coached ski racing for several years. So moving from being a ski racer to coaching, what did you like about coaching? And then what prompted you from then to make your transition from a career in sports to being in executive recruiting in the financial services industry?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting story. So, no, my when I was in school, I wanted to come out. I wanted to coach at a collegiate level and then coach at one of the ski academies, coach at Carabasset Academy up in Maine, sort of my last year doing it. It was, you know, it was a dream of mine to just here continue the lifestyle. At that point, though, my third year of coaching after school, my girlfriend, now wife, sort of said, hey, are we doing this for the rest of our lives? And in really taking a look at it, it didn't make, number one, it didn't make financial sense. And number two, it was getting to the point of burnout. Too, you know, you're on the snow 24/7, you're working like crazy, and then, you know, the things that you love to do, you no longer love to do. The last thing you want to do is to go skiing for the day, or go do this, or go do that,
right?
Because that was your work, and it was your life. And, you know, sometimes a lot of people say follow your passion, and, you know, a lot of times you follow your passion, but then you end up hating your passion. So that's really what started happening there. And then I had an opportunity to get into the, you know, into the recruiting business. It was during the dot-com days, so the barrier of entry was fairly low. And it was one of those things where, you know, if you just came in and you worked hard and weren't afraid to pick up the phone and overcome your fears, it was, you know, it was a great business to be in. And fast forward 20 years, you know, I'm still here, still doing it. So I think it was a great opportunity for me to learn business from the inside out. Learn sales, learn dealing with people, dealing with emotions, because it's an emotional sell. And it was a great opportunity. And it's, you know, it's something I still learn. You know, I learn every single day, you know, something new, you know, from this business. So, no, you know, I love it. And it's a great opportunity to connect with people and to, you know, and help people pursue their dreams. You know, it's a very similar to the coaching and helping them go through the process. So, in reality, it's not much different than it was before. It's just a different product.
And it, I mean, obviously, it's been 20 years now, so it's been you're obviously good at it. You've been very successful. One of the things that you said in one of your interviews, and that you just reiterated again, you said that if you get in on kind of the ground floor, and if you were willing to kind of put your fears aside and work hard and pick up the phone and call people, at that point, that was part of the trend. That was part of the success of the transition you made from coaching into recruiting. And one of your, so along those lines, in one of your interviews, you said that in order to be successful as an executive in today's demanding marketplace or a candidate, that people need to do the hard stuff, the tough jobs, right? So I heard that in one of your interviews. Tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean that to be successful, you need to do the hard stuff, the tough jobs?
You know, people don't pay you to do the easy jobs. And I think, you know, and sort of goes into another philosophy I have, which is true as well, is, you know, you get hired for one of two reasons. You get hired to either make the company money or to save the company money. And both of those are performance-based roles. You know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, I lost my job here, or I lost my job there. But, you know, in reality, were you actually making the company money, or were you saving the company money? Because ultimately, that's what hiring comes down to. And the way to be truly successful is to be the person who does the hard job. Be the person, be the go-to person. Be the person that solves the problems. You may not know the answers, but having the willingness to go out and solve the problems, I think, is the biggest thing.
Let me go back to talking about some of the competitive activities you're involved in. So you're still today competing, right?
Yep.
In, I think, skiing and cycling, and also in some of these crazy endurance races that you do.
Yep.
Like you tied for first place. You tied for the win in the 2013 Spartan Death Race, and then
yes.
You placed first in 2011 the Tuckerman Inferno. So why? What keeps you, I mean, these aren't, you know, this isn't like doing like a half century or doing a half marathon. I mean, what is it about these extreme challenges that keeps you interested and keeps you personally challenged in training?
You know, I think it's constantly trying to push to that next level and see what you can do, see if you can get to that next level. Some of the stuff, you know, on my docket for next year, Now we're doing a 4 or 5 day adventure race, the old Eco Challenge style expedition adventure race up in New England. They haven't even told us. They told us it's where we need to meet for day one. It's in Dover, New Hampshire, but after that we don't know anything yet until they give us the maps. Yeah, the maps the night before. I think it's sort of the quest for the unknown. You know, is it loving the fear of the unknown? I don't know if it's loving the fear of the unknown, but it's going into the unknown and see what you can and can't do. And it's just, you know, it's an evolution, you know. And I think what's pretty funny, you start doing some of these longer races, the average age of people seems to be going up and up. Yes. You know, 45 to 50 to 55. You know, I have a friend of mine who's 56, 57 years old, and he just got second at, you know, U.S. Adventure Racing Nationals last week. So you can always push the boundaries and always be learning, you know. And it's not just pushing the boundaries of what you can do physically, but I think it's pushing the boundaries of what you can do mentally, what you can learn, how you can become better each and every day.
And I know you've also said that physical preparation is sometimes, for an endurance event, is sometimes easier than the preparation mentally or emotionally. And I know in my racing, I've found that as well. It's more, I mean, I can get fit, I can get ready, but it's the mental preparation, it's the kind of stamina, the sort of mental endurance, the managing yourself as you through a long race. That, for me, was one of the bigger learning experiences and the harder part. So, you know, so why is it that you think it's harder in some ways to get ready for one of these races from a mental and an emotional standpoint than from a physical standpoint?
I think, you know, a lot of it is juggling, right? And a lot of it is the discipline of it. And it would be much easier not to go out and train when it's raining and 38 degrees. But you have to realize, you know, that's when you need to go out and train because other people aren't going to train. If you want to win, that's the type of stuff you need to do. So emotionally, sometimes you have two voices going on in your head. I don't want to do it. And the other one's saying you need to go do it. And for me, the need to go do it a lot of times, you know, overcomes the voice saying, don't want to do it, because I know at the end, and once I'm done with it, it's going to feel so good that I'm back when I'm having a warm shower or I'm enjoying that beer at the end. Those are the best parts of all this. And that's the reward.
That's the reward.
A lot of people
right.
say, you know, once you get to the race, the hard part's done. You know, the race is the final exam. And I tell this to my kids. I had this philosophy in college. If you're not ready for the exam by the time the exam comes, you're not going to be ready. It's not worth trying to cram the night before, because the preparation, you know, you're only going to learn so much that night before. So why don't you sit back, relax, know you put the hard work in to get you there, and then let it happen at that point.
Right. And I think that, like, for me, some of it is just thinking about, if I don't do this, I know that the other guy's out there doing this, right?
Yeah.
And so somebody else is going the extra mile. They're doing that extra preparation. And that's also one of the things when I'm working with executives that I'll coach them and say, look, you know, if you don't do this, I guarantee you, your peers are doing this. Somebody else is taking that extra step. Somebody else is putting in that,
they
know,
are.
That extra time,
they're...
right?
You know, I always run with the fear that people are chasing me. Yeah, you know, once you're at the top, you're not
right.
at the top that long, because someone else is coming right after
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
So you
right.
always have to be training or working like someone's chasing you at all times, versus having the ego, oh, I'm at the top. You know, you can be taken off the top in a minute and a half, right? It's, you know, once Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, people were breaking the 4-minute mile a week later. So the fact you were first is great, but that doesn't mean that all of a sudden the 4-minute mile is not going to become the 3:45-minute mile and keep
right.
going down from there.
Right. Well, and as you said, more and more when I'm racing, I see, you know, the average age is definitely creeping up, which is a good thing. I mean, because there's more things that we can do now through nutrition and the technology that we use, and to be able to create more stamina and to be able to increase our performance. But that just means that there's more people who are on your tail. So, you know, having that philosophy and discipline about, I need to continue to push myself and do more. And I think that also, I'm guessing, applies to when you look for candidates in the work you do, do you look for people who are, you know, are still competing and who have some background in athletics because you know that that's part of the profile and the discipline that they'll bring to the role that they're looking at?
It's definitely an added thing. It's not really something that I target, but if you go out there and you find someone who has that profile, it's great. You know, and it's not just sports. It could be a military background of having the discipline of military, or it could be that you're a concert pianist or that you're an artist. One of the things I always ask each of my candidates that I'm talking to is, what do you do for fun? Because that almost tells more about someone versus the role that they're doing. Most people I chat with, they can do the job that I'm talking to them about, but it's how are you going to fit in with the organization? How are you going to fit in with the CEO? How are you going to fit in with the team? I think there's a lot more. That's more the EQ side of things that people don't really get a grasp and understand, but that's more important in today's world than anything else. How can you sort of meld with your coworkers, your peers, your boss?
Right.
What common interests do you have? I think, and it's different for every organization. Someone might say, you're an Iron Man, and I don't want you to come work for us because you're so focused on training all the time.
Right.
Or sometimes it can be detrimental as well. But I think it's really the cultural that you're going into, and that's one of the things I really look at is the cultural fit. If hiring manager loves sailing and you're a sailor, great, it's perfect, or whatever it is. I think that's probably more important. It's sort of making that match.
Well, at the level of people that you're working with, I mean, they have the experience, most of them,
they
right?
Do.
So they have
yes.
the, right, so the competencies are there. So then it really is about the cultural fit. It's about, how do you mesh with the executive or the executive team. It's about the more broader kind of picture of who they are as a person and not just as a professional.
That's exactly what it is.
So let me ask you, so how has your experience competing in sports, right, from high school and college all the way through now, how has that impacted you the success you've had in your career?
I think it comes down to discipline. I think when you're a student athlete or when you're busy, you get more done. A lot of people say, oh, I'm so busy, I can't get that done. And this sort of forces, in being an athlete, forces the discipline of it. And if you want to be competitive, you get the job done so you can go out and train. Or you get the job done so you can go, or you get the job done so you can rest. I think really what it comes down to is, I treat work almost like a training session of, all right, I'm going to go in and I'm going to go hard for the next 4 hours, then I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to go hard for the next hour and a half, because going hard longer than that in a focused scenario is extremely difficult. And then the other stuff is, interview time and other things that I need to do. And I love the quote, sort of discipline is freedom, and that's really what it comes down to. So I think, trying to put everything together of work and training and racing is a challenge, number one. But number two, it gives you a sense of accomplishment. I've chatted very often about this, and if I have 4 hours on a Sunday afternoon, it's not going to be spent watching a football game. It's going to be going for a run, going to go grocery shopping to buy good food and trying to get all this stuff done in those time frames. So I'm always trying not to waste time. Every minute of the day is accounted for. And then when I crash at night, I crash at night.
You really crash, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to do everything you do, you have to be very disciplined. Doesn't mean that you can't have downtime, but you really do. And I coach people who are racing, or people said to me, how do you fit it all in? I said, you just figure it out. You have to be, you value every minute. You value every half an hour, spare half an hour you have. You look at the hours in the day and say, what are the most important things to me that I need to do? And I think that focus and that discipline that comes with the kind of training that you do, really flows over into your personal life and your professional life. But it's still a balance, I don't like the word balance, but it's still a challenge to keep all those balls in the air. So any tips for people who are listening about with the amount of time that you do spend on training or prepping for training, plus work, plus, you know, family, and I'm sure there's other things that you have going on in your life. How do you how do you integrate all that and fit it all in?
So one of the things when I started having kids, I have a 12-year-old and 9-year-old. One of the things I always said to myself is, I want to be a role model for my kids. I think that might have gone over the edge because they think I'm crazy. So now they're like, I'm not going to go do what you do or any of that stuff.
Right.
But now they're starting to see it because, you know, they're seeing what their friends do or don't do and that type of stuff. But I always tried to incorporate them in, you know, into my training. When they were little, I would take them running in a baby stroller. I had a baby stroller, probably have had 10,000 miles on it. We've took the thing all over the world, from Australia to the Caribbean to Europe and everything in between. But I would always be conscious of it, saying my wife needs a break as well. So I'll take one or both kids for a couple hour run. And, you know, and enjoy it with them. Stop and get, you know, ice cream along the way, or stop and get some M&Ms or that type of stuff. So I was always thinking about how can I give everyone else a break? Because what I really don't want this to do is to impact my family life and my personal life and my professional life. So I spend a lot of time training when it's dark. I get up very early in the morning. Sometimes I do it at night, but usually I don't, or I do it at lunchtime as well. So it's not affecting the time that I'm home with my family or with my kids. But again, it requires sometimes getting up at 4:30 or 5 and going out and being back so you can make lunches and get everything out the door.
Right.
You know, sort of the deal I cut with myself and said, hey, if I'm going to do this, I need to be able to contribute as much as I can. I'm not afraid to make lunches for the kids and go grocery shopping and cook and do all that, because it can be a burden on everyone. But what I really try to do is I do it when the world is usually either in downtime or asleep, so I can enjoy that type of stuff in terms of balance. And again, it's incorporating my kids into it. It's incorporating, you know, trying to incorporate my wife into it. Sometimes, you know, in the last couple of years, we've gotten more and more doing CrossFit workouts and going to CrossFit, and it's a great time where both my wife and I can go. And, you know, my kids are at the age now where we can leave them, you know, our 12-year-old or 13-year-old is good at home with the younger one, you know, that type of stuff.
Right.
So
right.
it's just thinking about, like you said, half-hour time slots. What can I do in the next 45 minutes? Do I have my sneakers at my desk, and can I shower and be back in an hour? I think, you know, for a guy, it's much easier because you can go out, go run hard for 45 minutes, take a shower, and you'll be back in your desk in an hour. I think, you know, for women, it's a little bit more difficult in being able to do that. But that's, or I always have gear in the car. If I'm going to a dentist appointment and it's, you know, somewhere a little bit different from where I am, incorporate a half-hour run while I'm, you know, leaving the dentist appointment or that type of stuff. And it's just, you know, again, it's sort of the, you know, and people will probably argue and say, you don't have any downtime. You're going full speed. And fortunately or unfortunately, I love to go full speed. If I'm not going full speed, you know, I feel like I'm moving backwards. And that's one of the things I really try to do, is to just, you know, continue going, going 100% or 110%.
Yep. But you're really making the most of every minute of the day, and you know
I try.
I think that's one of the secrets to try to making everything work. And it doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, necessarily be busy all the time, but it's really thinking about what's important to you. So there's work and there's training and there's family and there's other things, and how do you kind of mix those in together, right? I think that's one of the formulas I've seen with some of the executives that I work with, is so they'll bring their family, you know, to a workout, or when they're sitting watching the kids play soccer, they'll do their run around the field, you know, when they're not playing. I mean, you just have to try and think about creative ways to be able to do multiple things in the time you have, right? Instead of this time slot that this is work and this is training and this is family, you know, how do you kind of, you know, integrate those and bring them together, I think. And I think that's where the really success comes in. It sounds like you've done a pretty good job of figuring out, as your kids are getting older and you have more demands on your life, how to make that happen.
And that's it. If you're going to soccer practice, you know, bring your daughter to soccer practice, go run for an hour and a half and come back. Yeah, that type of stuff. It's constantly thinking about, all right, what can I do in this time? That's going to be an effective use of time.
Right. Yep. So let's switch gears a little bit. So tell me about Executive Athletes. So you founded Executive Athletes LLC, and tell me about why you did that and a bit more about it. And what are some of the objectives that you had in finding it?
Right. So as we all know, being a recruiter during the recession wasn't a great place to be, and being a recruiter during the recession in the lending business was even a less desirable place to be. And so I had plenty of time on my hands. And one of the things I said to myself was, if I'm going to cold call individuals, why don't I cold call individuals like myself? There's got to be other executives out there who are passionate about athletics, passionate about training, passionate about racing. Because what I found was, if I was randomly calling people that are working at financial services organizations, they weren't hiring, number one. And number two, more often than not, they were looking for a job. So it wasn't really a good thing, because we do all retained search. So it was, people weren't really being retained to do a lot of search work that was out there. So I use the philosophy of, instead of having to cold call people, let's connect with individuals like myself. There's got to be other individuals out there who are in an office environment, who love to train, who love to race, who are looking for that sort of the high performance lifestyle. And that's really where it started. I put on networking events. I actually just put a partnership with a company, Grand Dynamics. We're going to put, sort of small scale, highly intensive sort of expedition type stuff together. So that's really taken off as well. So it's a great opportunity to connect with very like-minded people. And people are always asking me, what's the vision of it, or how are you going to monetize this, or what are you really going to do with it? And in reality, it's an engine for connection is ultimately what it is. People, I love to connect people doing cool things. And here's an opportunity to go chat with XYZ from this, super cool company or try to help people, live their dreams and try them to allow them to connect with people they wouldn't normally be able to connect with, because number one, they didn't have anything, they thought they didn't have anything in common. And number two, a lot of people have a lot more in common than they thought. And it's just a great catalyst to get business done with people that are like you or I, is really what, is what Executive Athletes is.
Like you said, and it's really an engine for connections. And I think that's really one of the cool things about it. Very robust, lots of fun. And I find, too, when I meet people who train like we do, there are so many things that you have in common, as you said, like-minded individuals and things that you can learn from and each other and support each other. So I appreciate you having done that, because I think it's a really cool resource and been really helpful to me, and I'm sure to lots of other people as well. So, and happily for you that it happened at a time when it was when you were trying to find a way to keep yourself busy. So,
well, it, out of diversity, comes opportunity.
Exactly.
And and it wasn't just and I actually run a couple other fairly large groups as well. With a Boston banking group, I've got another 12,000 people, and a fintech group of another 8,000 or 10,000 people. So it's a great way to, let's connect, let's do business together, and let's gain, hopefully get recognition for everyone that's out there.
Well, absolutely, Mon. That keeps you busy.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, so what's next? What's next for you? I mean, you have Executive Athletes, you have the LinkedIn groups, you've got races that are coming up. Are there any other new and interesting projects that you're working on?
Like I said earlier, I formed a partnership with another firm that we're going to be putting on some expedition-style events with, high-level executive athletes, probably smaller 5 or 10-person type events. That's really the next step there. I'm announcing a few other, cool partnerships that are out there as well. So that's what's going on from that perspective. My
very
search
cool.
business, which is great because it's a good time out there, so that's continuing to grow. And just trying to keep in balance. I think a lot of times it's so very easy to get out of balance. And one of the things when I start finding myself out of balance, I ask myself, all right, how is this affecting my business? How is this affecting my family? And how is this affecting my health?
Right.
And if it's not positive, I'll back off on it, because it's so easy to waste time on calls that don't make sense, or it's so easy to waste time on things that don't add to your family situation, or it's so easy to, you know, do things that aren't going to propel you forward in terms of health-wise, because we can all get sucked into that very easily of going out and drinking too much wine and eating too much crap and all that. So really it's just, you know, balance isn't easy. It's one of the things you have to work on, but I think that's the discipline of it. That's, you know, sort of, you know, people, or what I try to strive for is to do that. And so that's really what's happening, you know, for me personally.
Well, the partnerships sound really exciting, a next kind of evolution in your, you know, your business and also your training, and it's a good insight in terms of how it is very easy to get distracted. So kind of thinking about what is really important to you across all those domains of your life, and is what you're doing really in service of the goals that you are trying to achieve in your business, with your family, with your training. And that goes back to the focus and discipline, I think, that, you know, naturally comes from being an athlete and from applying that through, you know, both through your personal and professional life. So how can our audience find you and stay in touch with you?
Definitely. So you can go, there's two different ways. My, you know, you can reach out to me via my work email, which is klubin@zrgpartners.com. That one, you know, that's an email that's always on. Or you can reach out to me at ken@executiveathletes.com, where I'm always updating the blog. I'm updating a bunch of different things on there. So that's executiveathletes.com. Or you can reach out to me via LinkedIn. Another great way is a great way to connect there. So feel free to reach out and connect with me on using that social media. And, you know, the world of Twitter, I'm at executive athlete without the E on the end because it's too long. Or you can, you know, follow any of the Facebook groups. So they're all there too.
Got it. Okay. Lots of ways to stay in touch with you.
There's lots of ways. Yep.
Busy man. Ken, thank you so much for joining us today. It's really been a pleasure having you on the Executive Aid Station show. I've enjoyed our conversation and appreciate your valuable insight and advice for our listeners. And for our listeners, thank you for your time for joining us today. That's it for today's show. Please visit our website, www.bobbylaporte.com, and sign up for our Executive Aid Station updates. I look forward to sharing our next episode of the Executive Aid Station soon, so stay tuned.